Welcome back to the Boneyard Podcast, everybody. This is your host, Jared Shepard, along with my good friend,
Artemis Brower.
We're coming to you this week with episode 186. 186. Artie, how we doing, my friend?
We're good, man. We're good. Coming off a birthday a couple days ago. Enjoyed myself. Yeah. No, I'm not old yet. I'm not claiming that old status. I'm not claiming that.
When do you claim that old status? Do you claim it at 30?
When they send me an AARP card in the mail, which is another 25 years away. So that's when you can call me over the hill.
What episode of the Boneyard Podcast do you think we'll be doing in 25 years?
Oh God, we're going to be in the thousands. Look, I don't even have children yet, man. I'm not old. Stop that.
Are you saying I'm old? No. I have a child.
Yeah, but you're not old yet, Jen. I wouldn't even say you're old.
I am with child.
But you are definitely more seasoned than I am because you are a father. You a papa.
I am a papa.
Them gray hairs gonna come sooner than they come for me.
Man, they're there. They're there. You can't see them now, but they're there. Well, happy belated birthday, Artie. I told you on Monday night. Happy birthday. And then I realized Tuesday night at like 11:35 that I forgot to text you. And I was like, this man's probably asleep. He's an old ass man.
The night's early now. The night's early. Nah, that's a lie. They're not.
So
I still stay up pretty late.
I can't get to bed before midnight. I just can't.
There's no way I'd be able to fall asleep before midnight. It's just not going to happen.
Nah. Which is crazy. I mean, Artie, he has a nickname for those of you that don't know. His nickname is Marty. Because
that's
he needs
a morning
sleep.
Thing, not a night
but,
thing.
But he needs his sleep.
I do need my sleep, yes.
And if he doesn't get his sleep, he is a very grumpy person.
But in fairness, I've always been open and honest with people, and I tell people what I need. If you're not willing to give me what I need, then you're going to face the wrath of God. That's not my problem.
Artemis is an asshole when he doesn't get his sleep. He just is. He make no bones about it. He's a great guy. But Marty, you do not want to see Marty. And I've seen Marty plenty in my life. But good, Artie. I'm glad you had a good birthday. We took my daughter to an aquarium over the weekend. So that was fun.
First time going to the aquarium?
Yeah, first time at the aquarium, first time at Concord Mills and seeing fun. I basically saw UNC Charlotte while I was there. So, yeah. Which I mean, that's Concord Mills, right? It's UNC Charlotte. great dining court or dining hall.
Crazy.
That's if crazy. You like Salsaritas, I mean,
I see the shade. No, look, Concord's got great restaurants, man. Concord's got great restaurants.
Yeah, we were there for the day and then came back, but. All right, Artie, let's get into it. But before we do, let me clear up some housekeeping. Boneyard Podcast, proud to be members of the Variety Sports Network. Check them out. 5-Hole Podcast. There's going to be a fantasy football forecast podcast later on this year.
Nice.
7-inning stretch. It is great. Baseball is getting heated up. Check them out. If there's other college sports podcast on there. If you want to learn about Mizzou or Arkansas or I think Tennessee's one of them. Great podcast. Check them out. Make sure you subscribe at Variety Sports Network. If you're watching on Variety Sports Network right now, hello. Make sure you subscribe to us at Boneyard Podcast on YouTube. So shout out Variety Sports Network. Also shout out to the Purple and Gold Collective. Todd and his crew are doing great things. Check them out. Maybe throw some coin over to them. Help support some more college athletes at East Carolina University. Head over to purplegoldcollective.org and see all that there is to see there. Artie, before we get started, do you have a number 86? I know we were talking about it before. You said yours might be chalk.
I do have an 86. Now, I made a little bit of a change because I don't want to do chalk. I know that's the whole point of us getting away from that. So I'm not going to mention the guy that I was going to mention. before the podcast. I was able to find somebody else to make a pivot. I have never heard of this guy, but apparently he had a pretty good NFL, right? Now, I would say pretty great NFL career. That is one Stanley Morgan, wide receiver, first-round draft pick for the New England Patriots, 1977. First-round pick, 25. Dude was a four-time Pro Bowler, had over 550 receptions, over 10,000 receiving yards, 72 reception touchdowns. I think he played his entire career with the New England Patriots. So one Stanley Morgan, my 86 for the week. Shout out to him. Shout out to all the old heads, all the true Patriots. If you were a Patriots fan back in 77, you're a true Patriots fan.
There you go. You said Stanley Morgan?
Stanley Morgan.
That sounds like a law firm.
Right. Well, JP Morgan Chase. It's finance. So
there you go. Stanley Steamer. Sorry.
I got the jingle in my head now, man. You can't do that to me. Call
1-800. No free ads. No free ads, Artie.
I'm sorry. I can't help myself.
All right. Mine, number 86. Dare I say, Hurricanes legend.
He's not.
He's really not. Played all of one game for the Carolina Hurricanes last season. Yeah, last season in the 2022-23 season. That was his final game in the NHL, Artie. His name is Andre Kasha. Played with the Maple Leafs, played with Boston, spent most of his career in Anaheim. Wore the number 86 his first year in the league. That was in 2016-2017. Former seventh round pick. That's the last round of the NHL draft for those keeping up at home. 205th overall. So Andre Kasha, shout out Hurricanes legend, wore number 73 with the Hurricanes. All right, Artie, let's dive into it. We got a lot to talk about. Today, big news, the big news of the day, the American Athletic Conference got up off their butts and finally decided to announce the 2024 conference schedule for football. Yeah. Did you see this?
I did.
This come across your desk? Okay. very promising schedule for the Pirates. Just going to say that. I think that this schedule sets up very nicely for the guys in purple and gold. And I, for one, am excited for it. It's basically, we have the opportunity to have not only our six home games, but nine within 4 hours of each other, or 4 hours of ECU.
Yeah, that's huge. That's huge. Don't have to travel far.
Three of your away games are within 4 hours of East Carolina University. Give or take a couple minutes. I looked it up earlier. UNC Charlotte, Concord Mills is about 4 hours and 3 minutes from Dowdy Ficklin Stadium. Liberty, about 3 hours and 45 minutes. Then Old Dominion, about 2.5 hours, 2 hours, 45 minutes, if you're being generous. Your thoughts early on from the schedule, and then we can kind of go, we can kind of break it down in parts.
Yeah, I know we're going to break it down in more detail. We'll probably talk about, best matchups, favorite games, yada, yada, yada. But like you said, it's a very promising schedule, right? It's the kind of schedule that you would hope to have after coming off a 2-10 season that we just did. Now, I did see some of the people on Twitter talking about 10-2, 11-1. I'm not going that far. I don't think I see that, but it's definitely the kind of schedule that you would like to have after coming off such an abysmal season and also having the kind of roster turnover that we've had in the portal and everything that's kind of transpired over the last few months. So promising. Initial thoughts is promising.
Yeah, I would agree. I'm excited about it, Artie. I think, like I said earlier, I think it sets up nicely. You've got some tougher group of five opponents on the schedule, right? You got App State, you got Liberty, you got San Antonio, right? Mm-hmm. But other than that, it sets up in a way that ECU can really make a run at the conference. It sets up a lot like a school like, maybe not necessarily like Tulane. Tulane had a little tougher conference schedule last year, but I don't see a game in conference really outside of maybe UTSA and Charlotte that, well, I won't say Charlotte, that I think every game's winnable. Even coming off a 2-10 season, I think every game is winnable. Maybe that's just the bias in me. Maybe that's just the homer in me. But I mean, remember, I'm one of the what was the word that they used?
Heavy downers were too negative.
I was too negative. Yeah. I'm too negative. But I think that there's not a game on the schedule that isn't winnable.
Yeah, no, I would agree that I don't think there's a game on the schedule that isn't winnable. I would also say that I don't really see a game on the schedule that I think is a blowout for ECU either, though. Like, I could definitely see us being in nail biters in every single one of these games. I could see ECU fans pulling their hair out for 12 to 14 straight weeks of this upcoming season. Because I don't look at that like, yes, I look at that schedule and I say, okay, yes, we can beat any team on here. And I also look at that schedule and say, we could lose to 6, 7, 8 teams on this schedule as well. So
I have a feeling that you're going to know a lot about this team after 4 weeks. Those weeks 2 through 4, I mean, Old Dominion, that's not necessarily an easy out, right? Playing them on the road in Norfolk.
Yeah.
It's not an easy out, right?
That's been on a little bit on the rise too over the last
right. App State, considered probably one of the top 5,
yeah,
top 10 group of 5 programs right now.
Yeah.
Liberty coming off a New Year's Six Bowl where I mean, they absolutely got dismantled because they played a weak schedule.
They had a good season last year.
They had a good season. And they return a lot.
Right, right.
So those three Liberty's games – I think will tell you a lot. And the fact that you get App State at home the week before you go to Liberty, I think that sets up nicely, right? I like that you've got App State at home, then you go to Liberty. Look, we knew that these games were going to be on the calendar this way. Right. But I like that you're playing at home, get a chance to get a big win at home against an App State team that's had your number the last 3 years.
Yeah.
And then go on the road to Liberty where, I mean, it's a rabid fan base, going to be a great atmosphere. It's exciting, Artie. It's exciting. And I'm doing the thing where I get my hopes up way too early.
As we all do.
For the season. Then you come back home and you play San Antonio. That was a game that was a slugfest last year. I think it'll be a lot of the same. And with a new offense, maybe ECU can outlast them, right?
Right.
Then you go on the road at Charlotte. That's, to me, Charlotte last year, we should have won that game. We were in that game. We were.
The thing about Charlotte, though, Jared,
we had an offense. If we had an offense already, we would have won that game. Much yes, like we if should. We had an offense last year, we would have probably won 9 games.
Right. Like, yes, we should have beat Charlotte last year, but we could have said that about 6 to 7 other games last year. But in the same breath, Charlotte's going to be better. Like, I don't think Charlotte's taking a step back. They're going to be a better football team than what we saw last year. And we lost to them last year. So I don't think Charlotte's going to be easy out.
Yeah, no, I don't think they will be either. I think that playing Charlotte, it's going to be a good game to play on the road. I mean, I'd be surprised if the stadium's not.
Oh, that's gonna be 30-40% purple.
I was gonna maybe say a little bit higher. I was gonna say 40-50, but yeah, I mean, you gotta think about how many alumni live in Charlotte. Live in
Charlotte, exactly. It's gonna be a lot of purple out there.
What I will say is the conference keeps pushing this as a rivalry game, and Charlotte fans are pushing it as a rivalry game. I don't necessarily see it that way yet. I mean, I don't like Charlotte. I know I started the podcast by talking shit about Charlotte and calling them Concord Mills. I know I said that, but it's not on the level. I think App State's on a higher level than Charlotte.
Well, right? App is definitely a rival. App is a clear rival.
You've played each other more than ECU Charlotte. Of course, Charlotte and ECU only have the one game. To me, we're not there. But if they're going to schedule us every year like they say they're going to, I it will turn into a rivalry. And what I'm going to say, Artie, is if they want to make it a rivalry and really make it a rivalry and make it really matter, put it on rivalry week. Put it the last week of the season. Every year. That way you know every year you're going to have a game that you can drive to on Thanksgiving weekend.
Yeah.
And both fan bases, I don't necessarily know if Charlotte will travel, but ECU will travel. ECU will travel on Thanksgiving weekend, 4 hours down the road. Hell, half of ECU alumni, I'm not saying half of ECU alumni live in Charlotte, but a lot of ECU alumni live in Charlotte. They would go to that game. I live an hour and a half away from Charlotte, hour and 15 minutes from Charlotte. I'm at that game. Brother-in-law went to Charlotte. He's at that game. Make it rivalry weekend if you want it to be real. That, and I mean, 49ers, you got Norm. I think that's their mascot's name, Norm the Gold Miner.
Yeah.
You got ECU, you got Pirates who love gold. The gold yeah, trophy.
It's got to be something gold. Gold and spot, right?
The I don't know.
Treasure. I would love to actually plan a rival where we play for something. Like there's some
we do. Trophy being we do.
Handed.
Which they, one is they that? Just, NC State, the Battle of the Barrel.
What do we get a barrel for that? I didn't know we got to get a barrel for winning that game.
Yeah, you get a barrel.
Is it just a regular ass wood barrel? Like it's just like a
it's like a barrel like a whiskey barrel. An
actual trophy or is it just a
barrel? Yeah. Now
I didn't know this was a thing.
NC State. So
I was today years old. I didn't know
it, that. It was the story goes that two brothers, one went to NC State, one went to ECU. They were very competitive growing up and when their teams played each other, they'd paint a barrel, right? That got handed over to the universities. And now they have plaques on them for every year that the team wins. And it would be passed back and forth between the student governments. And so back before NC State took it back, it used to sit in the ECU Student Government Association office.
Mm-hmm.
Now, NC State doesn't really care as much about the barrel.
Because they're a rival.
Right. But there is a victory barrel that is played for between ECU and North Carolina State.
I did not know that.
If you didn't know that, now you know.
Now you know.
But no, there should something gold. Artie, what would you make it?
Oh God, man, I don't even know. What's a tie-in between like a 49er and a pirate? Like what kind of
gold?
I mean, yeah, gold, but like I don't know, maybe like a golden sword or like a golden I don't know something cool, something unique, something different, something people ain't.
What'd you say?
A sword,
a golden what? Say it again.
I said it.
What'd you say? Say the word.
You know what I said, Jerry.
Say the word, Artie.
I'm not saying it again.
Say it. I need to hear you say this word.
No, I'm not saying it again.
How do you pronounce it?
I've already said it. I said it twice.
Yes, but I want to make sure that I heard it correctly.
No, you heard it correctly.
You said Sword?
Yes.
Sword.
Sword. Golden Sword. That's what I said.
It's Sword.
Sword, Sword.
Sword? Oh, jeez. All right. No, yeah. Let us know. Reply in the comments. Send us a DM. Clip this. Send it to the Sickos Committee. Sickos Committee, what should ECU versus Charlotte play for? The Golden Nugget? A big-ass Golden Nugget?
No, I don't like that.
That's what 49ers are mining for. Golden Nuggets. And Pirates don't care what kind of gold it is. It's gold. The Golden Nugget.
Nah, you got to do something like a treasure chest with Golden Nuggets inside of it. But not just one big-ass Golden Nugget.
Why not just one giant-ass Golden Nugget?
Nah, it would look better with a treasure chest.
Could you imagine lifting up the Golden Nugget?
You have the years of each team winning the outside Golden Nugget. The chest itself, and it's filled with Golden Nuggets. That looks a whole lot better.
Give me the Golden Nugget. I'm sold on the Golden Nugget.
I don't know. We're spending too much time on this, man.
No, I think this is the appropriate amount of time spent on it, Artie, because we need to get down to the bottom of the things that matter, and it's what ECU and UNC play for.
So
what?
You don't even consider Charlotte a rival.
A trophy would make it more of a rivalry. The Golden Nugget.
Yeah, I'm not sold.
The Boneyard Podcast, Highway 49. Golden Nugget Award. Book it. We need to come up with something, and we need to give it to a team, one of the teams, when they win. And it will be in the lore of the ECU Charlotte rivalry from now to the end of time. That's what we need to do. All right, moving on. After Charlotte, we have a bye week. Artie.
Yeah.
And then you play the Black Knights from Army, the whole Army. Not to be confused with the North Davidson Black Knights, my alma mater.
Nobody knows North Davidson, brother.
I mean, shout out Bryce Williams. Come on.
Nobody knows North
Davidson. Friend of the podcast. Then after Army, you come back home. Guess what? Homecoming weekend. Got Temple, the Cherry Crusaders, the Owls coming to Dowdy Ficklin Stadium. And then already a second bye week. We were talking about this before we hopped on. Two bye weeks. It's kind of interesting having two bye weeks, especially so close together. Your thoughts on the bye weeks and how it kind of shakes out for the Pirates?
Yeah. They're two bye weeks in a 4 week span. I don't know. I tend to think those things may not be as beneficial as we may think. Just because you're getting a lot of time off, you're getting rest, so that's going to be good for guys that are banged up, especially at that point in the season. Injuries, being hurt. It's by week 6-7, you're playing hurt. That's just the nature of the beast. So that's going to be good in that aspect. But I don't know. We'll see. We'll see if it matters. We'll see if it doesn't.
Yeah. I do like the bye week before Army. You got two games on the schedule this year where you're going to face the triple option. Look, we're used to it. We face it every single year. It seems like the American Athletic Conference hates East Carolina University. We all know that. But this year, it's nice to have a bye week before Army. And I haven't checked. I don't think Army has a bye week before us. So that is nice. No, they play UAB. They've got a 4 week stretch of games before they play us. So that'll give us a week and a half to get prepared for the Black Knights. All right. After the second bye week, you've got Who we got here? Florida Atlantic at home. The one FBS game you won last year. Got them at home. That's on a Thursday night. Get blacked out in the Boneyard. And then the next week, the Infamy Bowl, as I've begun to call it, starting now. Got to go to Tulsa. Tulsa time. Now, what kind of crazy shit is the conference going to pull this year?
Hopefully nothing. Hopefully it's just a regular football game with a regular ass ending.
So don't hold your breath, Artie. And then, Artie, the next to last week of the season, away at North Texas. You've got two games really where, Artie, you got to go to Oklahoma, come back, and then you're back on the road in Texas, pretty yeah. close to Tulsa, honestly. Those are two road games that you're not going anywhere where the atmosphere, you're worried about the atmosphere.
Right. It's not, you're not like walking into an electric, like, you know, dynamic atmosphere.
You're not walking into Kid Brewer. You're not walking into the bounce house, right? You're not walking into one of these bigger stadiums, which, hey, we all love it. We bring the energy, but
you know, it's funny you mentioned that. I'm actually happy you mentioned that, because when I look at these games, I actually only see two sellouts on the entire schedule.
App State, which one?
And Liberty. Those are the only two games where I think is going to be like a legit raucous environment. And even Liberty might be hit or miss.
I think Liberty will be, it'll be wild.
But those are the two. I don't think any other game on this schedule is going to be some sort of like raucous. It's going to be just absolutely bonkers. Like, those are the only two.
I could see Charlotte. Charlotte's not a huge stadium. Now those are two away games. I don't see more than one sellout. If we're calling it a sellout, at home. App State's going to be the biggest game at home.
App State's going to be a sellout. It's going to be kind of like what NC State was a few years ago.
I don't think it's on the level of NC State, but it'll be
I think it's going to be close. App travels. App's going to show up. Their fans are going to be in Greenville.
They got cars out there in Boone.
Make no bones about it. You can joke all you want. App State's going to show up in full force. They will be in Dowdy-Ficklin. And I think we're going to show up too. I think that game is going to be close to a sellout. I do.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's 45K. I'll say 45K early in the season. Weather's still nice.
Like that's if I'm an ECU student fan, that's the only home game I'm really getting up for. Like, I'm as a diehard, I'm gonna go to all of them. But the App game, if I'm being honest, is the only one I'm actually like super excited about.
Yeah. Navy would be nice, but Navy is Thanksgiving weekend. And we know how that goes every single year.
Right.
All right. Artie, just first glance at this schedule. Your 2024 Pirates are blank and blank. What are those blanks?
Like, you asking record?
Yep.
7-5. And that might be a safe number. I was wanting to go 8-4, but I don't think I have that much confidence to say 8-4 just yet. So I'm gonna go 7-5.
Way too early prediction. I'll be the homer. I'm going to say 9-3. Just because I do think that there's a lot of winnable games on this schedule.
Jared, if we go from 2-10 to 9-3, I mean, damn, Coach Houston should be getting Coach of the Year nominations, if that's the case.
He probably would be in the American.
To have that's an extremely quick turnaround. That's quick.
But we were 8-win team 2 years ago.
That's true.
Some players have changed.
Yeah, that 8-win team is gone.
But there's you got a lot of guys on that deep from that defense still here.
Yeah.
Okay. You've reloaded on offense in a big way.
Not in three. Look, I mean, I don't know.
Now, Artie, I say 9-3, but would I be surprised if we were 7-5? At the end of the day, I think we're going to a bowl game. But I do think that this schedule is set up so beneficial to the Pirates for the first time ever, it seems like. The American Athletic Conference has hooked up the Pirates with a fairly generous schedule.
Right.
I
will say this, and you can, this could be a hot take or whatever, but if Coach Houston cannot get to a bowl game with this schedule,
fire his ass.
Then that, like, this is the writing's on the wall. Like, if you can't get 6 wins off this schedule, that will say 6 wins. I think that's just absolutely.
I honestly think that. I would make the number even a little higher. I think make it maybe even 7. Like, yeah, it's one extra win, but you don't want to be average. You're going into year 6?
Yeah.
Under Mike Houston?
Yeah.
You can't be
like, even a 7-5 record, I would still be like, yeah, it was just an ass season. We were a whole lot better than last year, but it was just eh.
All right. Artie, we're 30 minutes into this episode, and we've talked about one thing. We'll talk more about the schedule. We got, I think it's 190 days, 189, something like that, days.
A long time till football.
Till football. So we got plenty of time to break down this schedule. Real quick, did you see this about the college football playoff, Artie?
I did.
Your thoughts on the proposed 14-team format? Real quick, give your thoughts.
I don't know. I like 12. I don't need to see 14. I don't need to see. I don't want it to become. What I don't want it to become is like the NCAA March Madness. So you have, you know, to me, it's more of a participation than it is really having the best teams in it. Like, I don't need to see 64 teams, right? Like, you can lower that down to 48 or whatever it may be. I don't need to see 14 teams. At that point, you're talking 8-4, you're talking 9-3. I think in college football, the regular season still has to matter. I think you still need to go out there and win 10-plus games. I think you still need to try to compete for a conference championship. I don't think we need to be rewarding teams that just because they played a tough schedule and they're in the Big Ten and they're sitting 8-4, but they lost to 4 top 25 teams, and all of a sudden they get into that 14-field playoff. I don't like it. I'm good with the 12. I think the 12 is good. I think 12 should be the max. It should be the cap, but that's just me.
Yeah, I'm going to go. I think the number should be 16. That's in my
opinion. If you're going to make a 16, make it a top 25 and call it a top 24.
I don't think it should be the top. And here's why I think it's the top 16 that makes sense. You're not adding an extra week. You just remove the buys from the top 4. You're not adding an extra week of games. Okay. I don't necessarily, I mean, I get like wanting to have a bye, but I also see how it could set up for some, I don't want to call them trap games, but I see how it could set up that way. Mm-hmm. I like 16 game or 16 teams because it's 8-8, one place 16, top 6, 8 automatically qualify. As top 6 conference champions automatically qualify, 10 at-large bids, those are your next 10, right? I like that layout. You're probably going to get an American Conference or Sun Belt Conference team in there almost every year, if not every year. Put them at 6, they play I don't have it worked out. Well, they play 12? No. They play like 8, 9, 10, something like that. I don't know. I've basically named every number. They 6 plays whoever, 1 plays 16, so on and so forth. I like that. I like that layout. I just do. I think it sets up nicely. You're not adding an extra week to the schedule. 1 plays 16. Hell, if you want to give those top four teams an opportunity to pick who they want to play, I'm all for that.
Yeah, once you get to that though, you're not talking cream of the crop in the conference, right? I mean, you're talking maybe a team that was third or fourth best in their conference. Do they really deserve to be competing for a national championship?
But there's an idea floating around right now of that exactly, that the top three teams from the Big Ten and the SEC are automatically in. Which, granted, it's the SEC and Big Ten.
Which, I mean, they're gonna obviously be much better conferences than any other conferences. They're right. But
then you're getting two teams from the ACC. I mean, who was the second best team in the ACC last year?
God, who was it? Louisville? It was Louisville.
Louisville? And
yeah. And Louisville was not a team that should have been competing. No. They had a really good season. But they were a top 12, top 14 team.
And same goes for the Big 12. I mean, why do they each deserve two teams? Hey, 6 automatic qualifiers, then let's go, okay, top 10 after that. Because number 1 and number 2 are probably going to be from the SEC, Big 10. Those two conference champions. Then you're going to have 3 probably right now, what, ACC champ, Big 12 champ probably over ACC. If the Pac-12 figures it out or figures something out, who knows? I don't think that they should get an automatic qualifier. But I think 6 and 10 make plenty of sense.
There is no Pac-12.
So I just think it makes sense. Give me 16 teams. Make it even. I don't want no buys. College football. All right. Already ECU basketball. Since last speaking, they've lost 2 games. Tough loss to Rice by double digits, 70-52. Game just ended against Memphis. Penny Hardaway and crew beat the Pirates in Menjis, 82-58. Felton had 19 points. 9 rebounds. What is going on with my phone? I don't know. Just start playing. 82-58. I'm looking at it on my phone. RJ Felton, 19 points. The Pirates just kind of fell off the wagon against Rice and Memphis. Your thoughts on where we are right now?
I mean, this is – I don't know. I feel like I sound like a broken record, man. This is just ECU basketball. This is what we are. Back and forth, up and down, topsy-turvy, and sitting at – what are we at 500 now? We're at 14-14?
We're 14-14 on the year.
14-14. So we are exactly where I thought we'd be at this point in the season. We are right on pace to finish the way I thought we were going to finish. So that's really all I have to say. we're on pace. I called it. We're going to finish the way I thought we were going to finish, either a game over or a game under 500, and that's ECU basketball. That's the state of ECU men's basketball. So,
yeah, I mean, and you got North Texas, who's 15-12 on the year, coming up this Sunday. Then you're on the road again on Wednesday at SMU. So you're staying in the state of Texas. SMU's put together a sneaky decent season, 19-9.
You Charlotte's together a good season.
Charlotte's 17-10. Hell, USF's in the top 25.
Yeah, South Florida's. I mean, in a season where I really thought FAU would run away with this conference, there's been some surprises.
This is a good basketball conference, Artie.
Yeah, because I really thought it was going to be FAU and then Memphis batting second, and I thought that was really going to be it.
South Florida is
they've got close to 20 wins, right?
South Florida is 21-5.
21-5. That's excellent. They're an excellent basketball team right now.
That's what we need for EC to do. We need to.
And they came out of nowhere. So good for them. Good for South Florida.
Yeah. Next two games on the road, and then you finish it out at home against Charlotte. End of the season can't come fast enough. But hey, let's make some noise in the tournament. Not saying win it. I'm saying let's mess somebody's dreams up. Women's basketball now 15-12.
Still party
on the season. Your thoughts on the Pirates?
Yeah, they're still fighting. I know we had like a triple or quadruple overtime, four overtime loss to
North. Yeah, that was tough.
You know, they're currently the best team in the conference, right? I think North Texas is sitting at number one. At least they're close to it. That's a really good basketball team.
They're 21-7 on the year.
Yeah,
lost by 2 points in quadruple overtime, on the road.
Yeah, that's the one you needed, right? I mean, that would have put us at 16-11. That's when you would really want it. It hurts. It sucks. But just to see these women still fight, though, like the fight is still there. We can still absolutely get into the conference tournament. Still make some noise if you want to. But that one sucked. That one definitely stung a little bit.
Yeah, ECU's 500 in conference play, 15-12 on the season, 8-8 in conference. Believe it or not, Artie, Tulsa is number one in the conference right now, 21-8. Granted, North Texas has a game in hand. So that's that. ECU's just in basketball. Hey, we're middle of the pack. We're not bringing up the rear on either side.
Right.
But it leaves more to be desired.
Yeah.
This Sunday, home against Temple, senior day. Go support the seniors. And then on the 5th, on the road at Charlotte. So get out there, support these ladies. Anything else on basketball, Artie?
I've got none notes. Yeah, no. I've got none notes on basketball.
All right, well, softball, Artie. I mean, these ladies need to be ranked. I know they lost last night to NC State, and honestly, they got blown out. 11-1, but they're 16-2 on the season. Come on now. Can we get some credit for these ladies?
How many games do you have in a softball season? Do we know?
50, probably more than that, honestly.
I think it would be between 50 and 60, right? So, I mean, they still got a long way to go, but 16-2. What world are you 16-2, and you don't even have like recognition? You don't even have, get any votes, right? I don't even know if they received any votes.
I don't think they did.
So, I mean, that's just crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how they don't have any votes. It's insane to me. Rank these girls. I don't know. Going off what's been going on, I mean, another strong week. They won every game in the Pirate Invitational. Pirates faced their first opponent with postseason aspirations in NC State, where they fell 11-2. NC State now leads the all-time series 16-9. Hey, that's all right. The NC State's a good team. All right, this weekend, the Purple and Gold Invitational, this weekend, ECU will play App State at 3:00 on Friday. I'm not sure if the times have changed. I know the times have changed for baseball, for the LeClaire Classic. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if the times have changed for softball. But as of right now, supposed to play App State at 3:00 tomorrow. Then they play Youngstown State at 5:30 tomorrow afternoon, tomorrow evening. Again, we'll play Youngstown State at 12:30 on Saturday. Then play St. Joseph's at 3 p.m. on Saturday as well. Lastly, they'll play App State one last time at 12:30 on Sunday. They host Duke in a doubleheader for a painted black set of games next Wednesday, the 6th. First game starts at 4 p.m., followed by the 6 o'clock game. Both will be aired on ESPN+. Shout out, friend of the podcast, Boneyard Podcast team member, Courtney Layton. I'm sure she'll be calling those games. ECU looks to make up ground with a 1-5 record against the Blue Devils. Artie, let's just say ECU goes 5-0 this weekend. And splits the doubleheader. So you go 6-1.
Mm-hmm.
You're sitting at 22-3 on the season. How are you not going to be ranked?
No, if they do that, I think they would be ranked. I think if you're sitting at 22-3, I mean, there wouldn't be 25 other teams in the country with that record. There just wouldn't be. And if so, then it's going to be the greatest year of women's softball ever. So I don't know how you would pull that off and still not be right.
I mean, you've got number 8 in the country is 8-4. Come on now.
You know how it works, man. You know how it works. They look at these power schools and all of the schedule, and they're playing better competition, and you guys ain't played nobody, even though you're beating everybody on your schedule. You know how it works.
I mean, Boston University's receiving votes.
That's what I understand. We're not even receiving votes. It's one thing to not be ranked. It's another thing to be that good and not even be receiving votes.
Yeah. I don't know. Already, I believe there's 60 games in a softball schedule.
They've got a ways to go, but still.
I mean, I'm just looking at I'm looking at some of their results. Played Duke. This is Boston University. Played Duke, lost 4-2. Duke's ranked 6th in the country.
Oh, so this is gonna be a huge matchup.
You take one from Duke and you're 22-3.
Yeah.
And you take one from a top 10 team, you better be ranked. All right, Artie. Anything else?
Nah, rank these girls.
Rank these girls. Interview with Coach Jason Dietrich, head coach Cal State Fullerton, and former ECU pitching coach of East Carolina University. Talked about his time in Greenville. We talked food. We talked a little bit of everything. His career. So we hope you enjoyed this interview. It gave us a lot of energy in preparation for the Keith McClair Classic this weekend. Then Cal State Fullerton head coach, former ECU pitching coach, Coach Jason Dietrich. Coach, how's it going, my friend?
Good. How you guys doing? Appreciate you having me on.
Doing well, doing well. Pledge is all ours.
For sure. So, I mean, you're traveling cross country this week. I know that the season's kind of just getting started for y'all. I mean, how's it been the first 2 weeks for you now preparing to go cross country?
The first couple of weeks been, interesting, so to speak. We have a whole new team for the most part. I mean, a lot of new guys and experienced guys. So we're just trying to figure out who can do what, give them opportunities. Played at Stanford, did well there, but they're kind of in the rebuild, so to speak, too. They're kind of rebuilding also. And then this last weekend against Fresno State, I thought Fresno State was a solid team. They did a good job. Their starting pitching did well against us. And again, we just got things to work on and learn. But, play tomorrow against Loyola Marymount, and then hop on Wednesday to head out to North Carolina. I know I'm excited. Our team's excited to play against three quality opponents, but also to go back to Greenville to see a lot of familiar faces and some friends there. Myself, my family, we're looking forward to it.
Love to hear that.
Yeah. And Coach, you know, talking about Cal State Fullerton, you know, obviously that's one of the most storied programs, you know, in the history of college baseball, you know, 4 national championships, 18 College World Series appearances. You know, what is it like to be the head guy for such a historic program in Cal State Fullerton? What is it like being, you know, that head guy, and what is the culture you're trying to set being the head men there?
Well, first and foremost, it's very humbling. I'm very appreciative and thankful for this opportunity. You know, I had a chance to be an assistant here. I grew up around the program, going to games, so I kind of saw the style. And to follow in those footsteps of Augie Garrido and Larry Cashel and George Horton and Dave Serrano and Rick Vanderhook, those are big shoes to fill. You got some Hall of Fame coaches right there. But that's, like I said, that's the blessing and the appreciation I have is the respect also I have for the program to come back to be able to lead it. It's, like I said, it's, I always pinch myself at times, but, you know, I've been thankful. And then what we're trying to do is just, you know, like I said, it's just, it's easy to kind of, you got to dig in and figure out what's going on here when I first came back. And then we're just, the culture we're creating, just, you know, working hard, being accountable, doing things right on and off the field. A lot of things, you know, that I've picked up from all the coaches I've worked for, you know, with Cliff Godwin, obviously being a guy I took a lot of good things from. He helped me tremendously along with the other coaches I've worked for, but that's the stuff we're implementing. You know, we want to play the game hard. Fundamentals are at a high level. The details are important. So this is a program, like I said, we're excited, but I think this year is going to be, we're just going to have to grind through some, not ups and downs, but just some, there's going to be a big learning curve because we're just trying to figure out with a bunch of young guys that we just got to be patient with them and help them grow, help them develop. And we're excited, you know, like I said, we're excited to play this week, but also just see the progression of who we can make from here on out.
For sure. Yeah. And you talk about being a young team. You do have two junior outfielders that I want to touch on, Colby Wallace and Moises Guzman. I mean, they seem to be hitting the ball well. Talk to us a little bit about those two guys. Are they the ones that are kind of leading your offense? Maybe some guys that ECU should be aware of this weekend?
Yeah, Moy Guzman is a guy that played a good amount last year for us. He's one of the three returning position players that we had that got a lot of at-bats and experience. You know, he had a kind of rough fall. He hurt his back. So he's coming back into it, but he's someone that brings energy, plays hard, someone that we're going to count on. Colby Wallace didn't have too many at-bats last year, but that's, as you know, sometimes hopefully it just takes them to get confidence and more experience. And he's starting off to the season pretty good. He's someone that he looks the part. He's physical, big left-handed hitter. It's just a matter of him getting out there and we're going to keep playing him and figure out what he can do. And hopefully he can stay within himself and continuously grow. You know, this game is about confidence. So hopefully he can keep on have some quality ABs and kind of just be a mainstay in the lineup.
And Coach, you know, I've always been curious to ask, especially a college baseball coach, what is a typical in-season day in the life look like? I mean, what is that day-to-day grind, that kind of, you know, life look like on a day-to-day basis, especially when you're in season?
We're talking about just from a coach or a player?
Yeah, just from a coach perspective.
Well, when the season starts, in essence, there's really no days off. You're going Monday through Sunday. You have today is technically a day off. You give the players a day off. Mm-hmm. But we're in the office. We're going over Loyola Marymount, talking about our the trip details for ECU. We're talking about this last weekend, things that we can get better at. So it's a lot of little things. You're going to talk about recruiting. We can go back out March 1st. We had a big meeting today, went over all kinds of stuff as a staff. And then we have to get, you know, obviously we're getting prepared for tomorrow to play Loyola Marymount. So that was a big topic. Just making sure our guys, where their bodies are at, talking to our trainers and our strength guy. So that's kind of like today, and then tomorrow we play, and then Wednesday is a practice day. They get on a red eye, they head to North Carolina. Thursday they get in and they have a light practice, and then play Friday, Saturday, Sunday, head back Sunday night. That's kind of typical for a season, because usually every Monday is declared an off day, but there's so many things going on. So when the season goes, in essence, we don't stop as coaches. The days we get off are Easter on a Sunday. And then, you know, I think that's unless you have a rain out or what have you, and then you got to try to make up that game. But that's kind of what it is. That's the things that we've done for, I've done this for a long time. And it's just the sacrifices that your family understands. And it's part of just the journey, like, you know, that we kind of go through. So it is what it is. But you know, like I said, you get in your routine and you just, you do it because you have a love and passion for the game of baseball and helping these young men.
Absolutely.
Love it. And coach, I mean, transitioning from a pitching coach, you were a pitcher, been a pitching coach all over the place. Now it's your job. It's your place. You're kind of the guy that's running everything. Talk to me about that transition for you, coming from ECU and then all the other places you've been.
You know, when you're just a pitching coach or an assistant, you pretty much have, X, Y, and Z as your responsibilities, and you make sure you do them at a high level. Now as a head coach, there's all kinds of different hats that you're wearing and make sure that you're staying on top of everything from your responsibilities. I'm still the pitching coach, but luckily I have someone that can help me with that and assist with kind of just watching things, the day-to-day, throwing programs, the bullpens and all that stuff. So the transition has been a little interesting for me, to be honest with you. The first year, I didn't think I balanced it that well, because I felt I had to do so many other things with the team and outside the team, with facilities to, donors, to alumni relationships there, anything on campus needed to be done, the recruiting side. So I think the learning is like anything in life, right? You just need to get the experience and get out there and do it. But I've gotten better now, my third year, of being able to balance it a lot better, make sure I'm putting in as much time as I can with the pitchers and their development. And doing as much as I can to help them continuously grow, because I felt like kind of not neglected on purpose, but you just felt you were getting stretched in so many different areas. I was trying to prioritize my responsibilities, and sometimes I was leaning towards other things I felt were more important, and the pitchers might have kind of didn't get as much as I probably should have given them. And so I learned for last year, I got better, and then I'm continuously growing in that aspect. So those are things I'm learning, but it's been great. Like I said, I've had great people. With Cliff Godwin, Rick Vanderhook, George Horton, and Mike Gillespie be great mentors, and great people have helped me learn how to do all these things. So it's helped me with where I'm at today.
Gotcha.
For sure. And I want to kind of have a follow-up to that, kind of going into the day-to-day that Artie was talking about. Scheduling always interests me in college baseball, especially when a game like this gets scheduled. East Carolina, Cal State Fullerton. I mean, opposite sides of the country, really. And I mean, two historic programs. I mean, obviously you have that connection to Coach Godwin. Talk to me about what goes into scheduling this kind of matchup or any other kind of non-conference games.
Yeah, usually scheduling, it's crazy. You're trying to schedule a year or two in advance because what your non-conference weekends are. So you usually have that ahead of time so you can plan. It's the first 3 or 4 weeks. Now we're going to a conference tournament in 2025. So we used to have 4 weekends. The first 4 weekends were open. And you're always trying to figure out, hey, can we have 2 at home and 2 on the road? You're wanting to challenge yourself. I believe our philosophy is we want to challenge our guys to play against quality opponents to see exactly where we're at so we can evaluate ourselves. And we want to go to places that are going to be an opportunity for them. Some of these guys have never gotten out of California before. So you're just wanting to show them exactly. It's still baseball, but you get to go in environments and places that are pretty special. And that's when I talked to Coach Palumbo about a year ago about scheduling, and he said that at an open spot. I'm like, hey man, let's figure this out. Let's get it going. I'd love to come out if you guys are wanting it. And he goes, yeah, let's talk to Cliff, and we made it happen. And like I said, it's coming across, it's coast to coast, but it's a great opportunity for guys to learn. And I think they're going to be. I mean, it's like anything. I tell them, like, guys, it's going to be an unbelievable environment and atmosphere. You need to really appreciate it and soak it in. And, they're going to be all over you, but that's the fun part, man. You got to learn to play in places like this in order to grow and get better. It's like anything, right? If you're blessed to be one of the 64 teams that's going to postseason, you want to make sure that they're battle tested and they want to go places and see what it's like and be in environments that are tough. So when you do get shipped somewhere because you can't host, then you want to make sure, like I said, you're battle tested and these guys know what it's like and they can do their best because they've been there and done it, so to speak.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, Coach, talking specifically about your relationship with Coach Godwin, what is that relationship like? And, you know, what has he kind of maybe helped done for your career? And also, you know, just your time at ECU.
Yeah, Cliff's a great guy. It's, I don't know if you guys do know, Cliff and I, the only time we crossed paths, I think it was in 2008 when I was at UC Irvine, and he was at LSU as an assistant coach. We played against each other in a super regional. That was the last games ever at the old Alex Box Stadium. And I was in director of operations at UC Irvine. Didn't talk to Cliff when I was there, just knew that I remember him. And then, you know, the crazy thing is a guy named Bryant Ward, who's at UCLA, played at ECU. And so when I saw ECU opened up, I just reached out to Bryant and like, hey, can you call my behalf? I always follow the program. I'm kind of a baseball college baseball junkie, so to speak. And I knew how good ECU was, and just to speak on my behalf. And he did, and, you know, I talked to Cliff. I'm sorry, I'm kind of dragging this, but I just want you to understand a little bit of background. But it's, you know, like I said, he gave me an opportunity. I'm so blessed. One other interview with my wife, and, you know, for him to extend that opportunity, he's been a, you know, it's, you think about it, it's you're wanting to do well, but to have him do that, it means a lot to me. Like I said, I'm indebted to him. But what's grown is a great friendship that I have with him and all the coaches on that staff. So I'm very blessed. And that's why I tell people baseball has been very special. Special, man, because you can the relationships you build with people. And like I said, Cliff and I didn't know each other 4.5 years ago, but we talk a good amount. I still have a house in Winterville, so I go back there frequently. And then I get to visit those guys and hang out with them. And so it's something that's special, and I'm very thankful. Like I'll call him and go, hey man, you gotta help me out. I'm kind of lost in some of this head coaching stuff. You gotta, you know, break it down, and he'll jab at me a little bit to get me going. But that's Cliff. He's awesome. He's a good person, as you guys know.
Yeah, love you.
Love Cliff. I was gonna joke that that y'all decided to schedule just so that you could come back out and eat some sup dogs. talk about some of your favorite memories or whatnot. From ECU and being in Greenville.
It's crazy. You know, I'm from California, but the crazy thing in life is that playing professional baseball has allowed me to travel when I was, you know, drafted by the Rockies. So I was in Asheville, North Carolina for one summer, and Salem, Virginia. So I had a chance to go through North Carolina and Virginia, and my wife is from Virginia. So I've been back east a lot. And so North Carolina is always a place I thought was beautiful and nice. And so going back and going to Greenville, an opportunity, and just the people there are awesome. You know, not knowing, haven't been there, just the people, the community. And I, you know, knowing that they're huge baseball fans, they love the game, it was awesome. And just being there in general, like I said, there's the great thing is like there's so many little like mom and pop places. There's not a lot of brand names. You know, you got Cubbies, like you said, Sub Dogs, you got Altavola. There's so many places we love to eat out there and go to and just hang out. But the times there, like I said, that's why we kept our home. To be honest with you, maybe when that time comes, I think we'll be heading back there to, you know, my time is done in baseball and we want to retire. We're looking to hopefully get back there, cause that's how much that place has impacted our life. And we really enjoy it there. And we have a lot of friends there. And like I said, ECU is a part of our life, and so we're excited.
Yeah. And, you know, Coach, one of the last questions I have for you, because I'm just curious about, you know, your perspective on this. When it comes to college baseball, what are some of the traditions that you find in college baseball that you can't really find in any other sport or any other level, but you just it's you know, kind of specific to college baseball that you love so much?
It's a good question. Kind of put me in an interesting spot. I think the one thing I love about college baseball is just you see when you have a bunch of young men that have a passion for the game, and then you get to go places to play, just to play the game of baseball throughout the United States. To me, that's what it's just the energy and enthusiasm, the different areas that we've been blessed to go to as a coach and as a player. I mean, all the different cities, different universities. College baseball, it's just there's nothing like it, man. They always say, what is the greatest show on dirt? It's so true. It is, because it's just so much fun. And like I said, it's just the passion that these guys have. And when you have a good team and a good bunch of players, to see the growth and knowing that you're having that special year, so to speak, and then you get to that postseason, and then you know, and see what happens, because anything can happen, right? When you get in there, you punch your ticket. But that's one of the things I enjoy most as a coach is when you work so hard in a whole year, then you really work hard for that postseason, to be honest with you, because it's 64 teams and then anything can happen. And, you know, I've been blessed to have been a part of, I think, 5 super regionals and 1 trip to Omaha. And obviously your goal is to get to Omaha to compete for a national championship. But to do the journey with all those guys, that to me was college baseball. It's just so much fun. And you get a chance to be around, you know, different places you never thought you would be. And just to play baseball, you know, like I said, that to me, that's what's unique. And the popularity it's getting nowadays with all this ESPN Plus, it's on TV all the time. You're talking about the ratings were the highest ever at College World Series. I think they're just seeing the enthusiasm, the passion these 18 to 22, 23 year olds have, and it can be infectious. And that's why it's so demanding. And that's why a lot of programs, you know, the Power Five guys are getting better, and we got to keep working harder because mid-majors it is what it is. We're labeled that, but our mindset's always going to be, we want to be the best, and we're going to do little things to compete at a high level, because that's what Fullerton's done. And that's what we believe. So.
Absolutely.
And to that point, I mean, Coach, everybody talks about the 11.7, right? The 11.7 scholarships that baseball gets, right? What changes to college baseball would you make to improve the game?
Well, I think that 11.7, you know, it is, you're talking about, there's so many different schools that have some tuition, books and fees could be up to $50,000, $60,000, $70,000. Luckily, being at state schools, ECU, Cal State Fullerton, we don't have those. So we don't have to pay the in-state, you know. But I think that's where the NIL money is coming in, to help other people to supplement not just the scholarships. They're being able to pay players that they're getting everything paid for. To me, it's like, I wish they could monitor that better, because you're getting a lot of kids, especially in California now, they're all leaving. A lot of good players are heading to the bigger schools because they have better facilities and they're getting more money because resources are there. And so we have to deal with that, and that is what it is. So it's just monitoring that. If they can extend that more, I think it'd be great for the scholarship reasons, just because 11-7, like I said, it's, you're divvying up the best you can amongst 27 guys. That's the maximum amount you can give, you know, up to 27 players on a roster. So you're doing your best to give that out. And like I said, some get financial aid, but this NIL is something that we're a little behind the eight ball because we're working hard at it, but we're getting a little bit of treadway going where we can, hopefully people are the donors and they're doing their own thing to figure out how it works. Cause as coaches, we can't be involved, but they're finding ways as, you know, as a department to help us kind of continuously grow and keep guys, you know, cause some of those big boys are trying to pluck the mid majors going, we got money and we're going to kind of bully you around a little bit because we want to. And again, I get it. I'm not, you know, we're doing our best to build relationships with our players and we want to keep them here. But we understand that some of these guys don't have the resources in their life and it can help their family. So I just think they can monitor that a tick better. That'd be, you know, for me, I'd like to know, unfortunately, who are the ones that are not doing it right. And kind of they need to be punished, so to speak, for doing things kind of, you know, in the manner that everyone was playing by the books. So yeah, there's, you know, that to me is one of the things I think they should be monitored. And I don't know how you do it, but that's not for sort of the NCAA to figure out. They're the one that's created this. So I think they need to figure out how to do a better job and make sure, because the playing field, I think at times we feel it's separating a little bit right now. And as we continuously work hard to keep on growing in college baseball, there's a little bit of a shift right now, as you're seeing. And that's something that, you know, to continue with the 300 Division I baseball programs, we all need to make sure we're doing our best to keep us all to as equal as possible. And it's not going to always be that way, but we understand and we're okay with that. But there's still, like, you don't want to be these Power Fives are going to branch off and do their own thing, and then everyone else, you're in a different division or a different 1AA now. I don't know. It seems like that you can go that direction. I'm not sure, but you're hearing all the rumblings out there, and there's always all the hearsay. Hopefully it's that doesn't happen, but crazier things have happened, as you know.
Yeah, for sure. And thank you honestly for the candid answer. I love that. I just have one more question, and I kind of joked about it earlier about going to Sup Dogs. We ask every guest that comes on the Boneyard podcast this question: When you go to Sup Dogs, I'm sure. Are you taking the team this weekend to Sup Dogs? Are you?
I'm not. No, I'm not taking them. The greatest thing is I've only been there once.
Okay.
Oh wow.
Once, yeah. So I'm kind of that coach going, no, that's a popularity, and that's where all the guys are going to be, and students. I'm kind of the one that goes, let me go away from those places. Okay. Because, you know, family. So I'm kind of like, I'll go away to different places. And I've only been there once, but it was with some former players. And just to have, I forgot what I got to eat, but.
Oh, well, that was going to be the question was what was your Sup Dogs order? But if you can't remember, that's fine. What was maybe then your favorite place to eat in Greenville?
There's numerous places. Sam Jones is a place. I mean, the best wings I believe are there. Alcavola is a family place. We love going there for the Italian food that's there. So those are just two that come to mind that we really love. Obviously, Wasabi 55. That's a good little place. Like I said, we have random places that Cubbies, like I said, I like going there too. It's, you know, it depends on kind of what mood we're in, but there's a lot of great places to eat there. And we're just, so we try to venture off to make sure we're going to support all the, you know, the local restaurants, because they do a great job. The food's great. And that's why I got to keep walking and exercising and doing something.
Thanks.
For sure. Yeah. And then I did think of one last question that I wanted to ask, and I meant to ask this earlier. You talked about the environment in the jungle. We saw a great matchup yesterday, ECU Carolina. Have you talked much with the outfielders? I know you said you mentioned it, but have you talked to them about what to expect going into the jungle?
I told them, I go, it's going to be very quiet out there. Maybe a little church mice will be out there. So just, you'll be fine. So don't say anything. I just said, hey, man, I can't prepare you for what's going to be out there. They're going to know a lot about you, and they're going to be on you, but they do it. And I'm very, you know, it's just, that's what a home field advantage is all about. I just said, hey, it's something I told all the outfitters, just enjoy it, man. Relish it. Have fun. Don't ever take it personal. But I go, that's, you're going to experience some fun stuff out there. And like I said, that's what it's all about. You're going to see what it's like to see what a passionate fan base is about. So I shared a lot of that with them. And I go, but guys, I can keep talking to you about it, but until Saturday, you're not going to know what it's really like. So just, I want you to take a step back, take that good breath and enjoy it. Because like I said, it's going to be a good crowd there. And they support their Pirates at a high level. And like I said, it's one of the, for me, and I don't know if it's biased, but having experienced that in 2021, especially in that regional, when we beat Charlotte, the place was rocking. It was unbelievable. And I shared that with them. And then when we beat Maryland to go to the Supers against Vandy, it was still rocking. I mean, that place. And then I went, when you guys were, I went to the regional and the super regional that you hosted a couple years ago. And that was just, just support, obviously, the program, support the coaches. It was a blast, too. It's amazing how much noise can be there when it's 6,000 people. It sounds like it's freaking 25, 30,000 people. It sounds like so many people.
I think the numbers are fudged a little bit, but yeah, it's amazing. I mean, I equate it once. I was at that super regional and it felt like a jet engine taking off next to you at times.
It is. That's what's fun. That's what's awesome. That's where, again, and that's where I told our guys, like, we have to, you need to experience this. And that's where, some people call it a bucket list, and I want them to, had the blessing of being there, but I want them to enjoy it. And that's part of the scheduling piece too, right? We want to go different places and experience the good things. And that's what, you want that student athlete's experience to be positive. So when they leave, like, I had an unbelievable college experience. And I know this is going to be one of the things that they're going to be like, ECU is going to be unbelievable when they walk away. And they're like, this is, coach, I'm glad you took us. I'm like, well, let's see how we do first, right? If we had a rough weekend, I'm like, it was awesome. We love seeing everybody, but gosh damn, we got to get better. Or hopefully we did okay. We'll see, right?
Well, coach, we wish you the best of luck on Friday and Sunday. And we wish you safe travels out here to North Carolina, to you and the team.
No, I appreciate it, guys. Thanks for having me on. And like I said, I always root for the Pirates, except one time this year. So
we'll let you not root for us on Saturday. That'll be fine. Thanks for joining us, coach.
Yeah, coach.
We'll talk soon.
Okay. You guys take care.
You too.
Have a good one.
Pirates are sitting at 5-3 on the season. 0-3 on the road, 0-2 in midweek games. Got to figure it out.
Yeah.
Very, very exciting weekend. Artie, that game on Sunday, if my kid isn't turning my hair gray, that one almost did.
That was a wild finish, man. That was a wild finish to a great series and a great game. So,
your thoughts, like, I mean, ECU, I mean, set a new facility, record crowd of 6,017.
Crazy.
Surpassing the 6,003 fans that filed into CLS almost a year ago, to the day on February 24th, 2023. I mean, that last game, it was a bullpen, like, I don't know. It was the wildest, one of the wildest college baseball games I've seen. Back and forth, two heavyweights throwing punches, elite starting pitching, questionable bullpens early in the season. I mean, it was everything you could ask for growing the game of college baseball.
It was great for the program. Because we got a lot of publicity. I know a lot of people were watching that weekend series, and it was great for the program to be able to win that. Like you said, two heavyweights. I've been to CLS when it sold out. 5,000 to 6,000 in there really sounds like 15,000 at times. It gets loud. It gets raucous. And just really great for both programs. It was great for Carolina too. But really, really good for ECU. I was expecting a letdown. So, you know, the walk-off, you know, home run that Old Dominion had to beat us the other night. I was expecting that. When you have such a emotional, huge matchup coming off that weekend series with Carolina, I was absolutely expecting a letdown. I would have been shocked if it be Old Dominion, but I was kind of expecting it. I wasn't shocked that we lost that game, especially in the fashion that we did it. Because I just think we retired. But sure, we got to figure it out on the road. I think all of our losses on the road have come by one run. So that's just something that we're going to figure out over time. We're not getting blown out on the road. We're losing to quality competition as well. But still, nonetheless, 5-3, I think we're going to be – I don't see us losing too many games going forward. I think we're going to really hunker down and buckle up. But we've seen how good this team can be. We've seen what this team can be at their best, and at their best, they can beat anybody in the country. And if they're in the friendly confines of Clark LeClaire Stadium, good luck to anybody that has to walk into that building. Good luck.
Yeah, I mean, the jungle was – I had people texting me that didn't go to ECU, don't really follow ECU baseball. I had people that I was like, hey, you're getting into college baseball, watch this game. And they were texting me throughout the game and being like, holy crap, I need to see that. That is a – bucket list.
It's an experience. It's a event. Legit experience.
And I mean, you can't beat it. But LeClaire Classic this weekend, Artie, you got Purdue, Cal State Fullerton, and Southeastern Louisiana.
Yeah.
We talked about Cal State Fullerton. Historical program.
Right.
Four College World Series championships. Been to the big dance 18 times. Artie, talk to me about what you think about having a school like that coming into ECU.
Yeah, I mean, I think it, you know, obviously they're not as great as they once were, but still, when you carry that name,
I ain't as good as I once was.
when you carry that name, though, when you carry that legacy, that history, obviously, and then being, you know, as important as the LeClaire Classic is, that's huge. Also getting a Big Ten school like Purdue, getting a name brand, you know, everybody knows the Purdue name. So that's also pretty huge. And then, also you're getting sort of some love to Southeastern Louisiana. I don't know too much about Southeastern Louisiana. They could be a great baseball program. I honestly wouldn't know. But, you know, showing some love to some of the smaller mid-major schools like them as we are ourselves. But that in itself is big. And that's why I love the LeClaire Classic, because you have big name brands, you have smaller brands. They're all coming together for that one weekend. It's going to be a good weekend of baseball.
Yeah, Artie, for sure. Southeastern Louisiana, 6-3 on the season. Beat Mississippi Valley State 12-0. Also beat Xavier of Louisiana, not to be confused with Xavier of Cincinnati. Shout out Roll Blob Podcast, 22-5 on Tuesday. So, and beat UAB in a weekend series this past weekend at UAB. Yeah. Now, as far as Cal State Fullerton, won a weekend series against Stanford. Didn't have the best weekend last weekend. Had a midweek game rained out last week against San Jose State. They're not off to the hottest of starts, and Coach Dietrich talked about that. But they're still kind of battle tested. My favorite part of the interview was him talking about how he described it to his team coming into Clark LeClaire.
Enjoy it. Enjoy it.
And then looking at Purdue, they're 6-2 on the season. And am I seeing something wrong? Or are they 7-2? Their website's kind of crazy. It looks like one thing says 7-2. The game say 7-2. The record says 6-2. So we may have to have that fact checked. But I mean, they played Stony Brook, and they played George Mason. They haven't played anybody.
And then, that's your record.
Yeah, you gotta win the games to put on your schedule. But you put your schedule together. They got a test tomorrow inside Clark LeClaire Stadium, East Carolina University, at 2:00, updated start time. They need to take this weekend seriously. They got to play Notre Dame on the road on Tuesday after this game. So, but they're okay. They're not world beaters, but they've got an okay start to the season. Artie, my take: ECU goes 3-0 on the weekend.
Ooh, okay, okay. I
put another broom up on the flagpole or on the light pole.
I think I would agree with you. At home, CLS, LeClaire Classic, like, yeah, and we're sitting at 5-3, so I think they know the pressure's on right now. We got to string together a nice little run
and
get ourselves going. So,
Artie, to be fair, two of the teams you've lost to are inside the top 25. I saw somebody put something together earlier. I mean, ECU, their two losses are inside the top 25. The top 10, I think they're combined 2-2 on the road, and then they're also they haven't played inside the top 25 really. So, look. Two midweek losses and one weekend loss isn't gonna drop you in the standings. Now I think if you go 5-0 over the next week, you got two games next week against VCU, which not a bad team to play. I mean, they beat NC State opening weekend. Hey, ECU needs to find one or two guys that can pitch in the midweek and give you a solid 5-6 innings. You do that, you'll be golden. Also, I think they need to be a little more aggressive at the plate during the midweek games. For some reason, seems like they kind of clam up during the midweek. But that's my honest opinion. All right, Artie, we're going on an hour and about 25 minutes after the interview. So, right.
Wrap this thing on up.
Let's see. Walk the plank. You got to walk the plank for me?
I honestly do not have to walk the plank. I like the one you picked. I know you're about to get into that, but I honestly do not have a walk the plank this week. Artie is not upset with nobody.
Artie's just happy to be 29 years old.
I guess.
All right. UNC Board of Governors announced that there's a new policy that was approved that all state universities must seek system president approval to switch conferences. So if the Sun Belt wants to join the American, if App State wants to join the American, they gotta submit it to the Board of Governors. The system president can then approve or deny their move to the American Athletic Conference. If NC State wants to try to jump to the Big 12, the Board of Governors have to decide on that. UNC wants to go to the SEC. I don't think they fit in the SEC. I think they fit more in the Big 10. But let's say they wanted to go somewhere. It has to be approved by the Board of Governors. Quotes from Raleigh News and Observer. The chancellor of any school planning a conference move must provide to the president advanced notice of that move as well as a financial plan associated with it. The president can either approve or reject the plan. If approved, the president must notify the Board of Governors, which could then bring the proposal to a vote. If the board rejects it, the school would have to submit a new financial plan. We're starting the approval process. Okay. UNC voted against Cal, Stanford, and SMU joining the ACC. NC State was originally against them, but then became the flip vote that allowed all three to join. Okay, that's just kind of a – keep that in the back of your mind. All right. This applies to every UNC school system, so ECU cannot move unless the UNC-dominated Board of Governors approve the move. This board is dominated by the two schools in NC State and Carolina. Some members to note, the chair of the board, Randy Ramsey, NC State alum, Kinston native, lives in Beaufort, North Carolina. His term ends in 2025. Wendy Murphy, the vice chair of the board, she's a UNCW alum, but both of her kids went to NC State. Her term ends in 2025. And then lastly, Pearl Burris Floyd is the secretary of the Board of Governors. She's a UNC alum. Her term ends in 2027. Mm-hmm. So, Artie, there's three votes against right there. The same shit, different day, NC State and Carolina being able to decide what little old East Carolina University can do. Come on now. Get out of here with that bullshit.
But I mean that anybody across the UNC school system can be a part of the board, right? Like anybody from any affiliated school. So you can have somebody from App State on the board. You can have somebody from ECU on the board. You can have somebody from a whatever on the board. So I mean, that just means we got to try and infiltrate and get somebody on the board.
But it's appointed. You got to be appointed and
right.
They are heavy on the UNC and NC State appointments.
Of course. So we know how to vote.
And that's why when we were looking for a new chancellor a couple years ago, it was being appointed. That's a position that's appointed by a board, or the interview process goes through the board. And that's why a lot of ECU fans had a problem with the process, because they were trying to appoint somebody that was a UNC guy. Right? So I like where we're at with Chancellor Rogers. He said multiple times he'd come on the podcast, which we just got to get it cleared up. But all in all, it sucks for the public schools in the state of North Carolina. Because why shouldn't they want East Carolina to be in the ACC? You would think that they would want ECU to be in a Power 5 conference. You would think that they would want the same for App State. And it just sucks that we've gotten to this point where ECU is still having to fight UNC, the UNC overlords, and trying to get what they deserve. But I digress. Board of Governors, walk the damn plank. Yeah, I mean, what are you going to do about it? It's the joys of being a public school, a state-funded school.
Would you even want to be in the ACC though?
At this point, no. Would I like to be in the Big 12? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we feel like more of a Big 12 school than we would an ACC school. I mean, we just do.
I would agree. But let's say that ECU has like goes to Omaha this year in baseball, figures it out in football over the next 2 years. Next time realignment comes up, the Big 12's calling. Hey, we want you to join our conference. Oh, we got to go talk to our friends at the Board of Governors.
Right. We got to get permission from mom and dad first. Hold on.
Yeah. Get the fuck out of here. All right. Artie, that's all I got. Anything else? You said you don't hate anybody this week. I hate people every week, but that's just who I am.
I'll have a walk to plank next week. I can promise you. I have something to hate on. So, but I got nothing else. Good show.
Hey, you don't have to hate. Don't add hate to your life.
Don't add hate.
I got enough for the both of us.
How about that, Jerry? You would know, man, because you're getting blocked every week by somebody. So,
all right. Check out Variety Sports Network. Make sure you follow us on social media at Boneyard Podcast on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, at The Boneyard Podcast on TikTok, at Boneyard Podcast on YouTube. Give us a subscribe. If you do, you're a friend of the podcast for life. If you don't, walk the damn plank. Leave us a 5-star review. Anything less, you can walk the damn plank. Artie, let's get the hell out of here.
Hey, as always, Pirate Nation, we love you. Wash your hands, wash your butts. Till next week. Deuce.